Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. NFL Week 14. Oh, where has the time gone? Monday Night Football we'll get to in a minute. Five big matchups that we'll preview in great detail. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Week 14, the grind is real. Counting down the weeks.
You can almost see the light at the end of the tunnel. And while I know a lot of our listeners out there go, no, we hope football season never ends, it really is a grind on this side of the counter in this business. As you try and figure out ways to grind out a little bit of a profit, or in our case, just kind of push to get back in the black for the season.
That's the goal. College has been significantly better as a whole than the NFL. But still have time. I know we caught fire last year towards the end of the NFL season, ran really hot late. So hopefully we repeat that. And I know our focus will shift there with no Wednesday pod the next few weeks. So all about the NFL, all about the home stretch, and let's pick this shit up a little bit.
No doubt about it. And plenty of opportunity out there. Before we get into this week's games, Payne, just wanted to get your quick takeaway from Monday night. We saw the Vikings
going to... Who played Monday night again?
The Vikings and the Seahawks.
There you go.
We saw the Vikings take care of business at least for a half, taking a 17-10 lead into the break. And like we talked about on Monday, if you give Russell Wilson an inch, you may as well give him a mile. But it was the Vikings offense turning the football over, creating short fields. Seattle took full advantage, ultimately winning that game by a touchdown.
If you had the first half under, that was a rough break from whatever Russell Wilson was attempting to do there by knocking the ball down. Both offenses are really good. And I was really impressed with the Vikings because once they got down double digits, you're like, yeah, here we go. Cousins in prime time. He's doing it again. And he charged them right back without Dalvin Cook, without his left tackle. I thought Cousins made a pretty nice statement there. I think Minnesota's for real, at least offensively. Thielen is waiting in the wings to return. My fear is, and it came true again, this defense is terrible. God, I hate saying terrible because it's not the right word, but it is just, they have holes, they have issues. Some of these underlying metrics are terrible. And Seattle exploited them. Defensively for Seattle, minor improvements. There's a lot of names on there. And I know everyone's pounding the table about how good Quandre Diggs has been since he was acquired by Seattle. And yes, he's been very good, but sheesh, calm it down, Seattle fans. You read the articles last week. Earl Thomas 2.0. He's got graded out the 43rd best safety in the NFL. It's like, pause a little bit. He has helped, but they still have issues. I think the hope is, and they mentioned this on Monday night about Ziggy Ansah, he's now finally back to full strength. He couldn't really do anything this offseason. He was 15 pounds underweight. He's now back up to his full weight, and they're hoping that down the stretch he can provide some of that pass rush that's really been non-existent with him and Clowney, but Clowney's dealing with the core injury. They're still having issues defending tight ends. Kyle Rudolph had the big touchdown again. So there's holes on both these teams, but right now it's all about Seattle's offense. It's all about Russell Wilson. You have three great receivers, O-line doing a little bit better of a job. You got two guys going in the backfield. It's a really potent offense.
Yeah, fun game to watch, and two teams that are clearly going to have their chance to make something of their playoff chances. Although if you talk to Bears fans, at least in Chicago, they believe Minnesota is going to be on the outside looking in because the Bears are, of course, going to overtake them in the race for the NFC. But that's a different discussion. Yeesh. For a different day, and we may as well.
It could be today because I hear we're breaking down the Bears.
The Bears will be on the docket. So will the Seahawks for their Sunday night game as they travel down the coast to take on the Rams. But we'll start things at New Era Field in lovely Orchard Park, New York, where it's Buffalo installed as a 6-point home underdog as they welcome in the Baltimore Ravens. Total on the game, 44 at Foxbet. And Payne, this is one of the more fascinating games of the week, in my opinion. When you look at Buffalo having extra time to prepare, you've lauded this coaching staff and their ability to be chameleon-like in morphing some of their game plans. And two quarterbacks that didn't get all of the buzz in the same draft class. Josh Allen, of course, going inside the top 10 and Lamar Jackson at the tail end of the first round. When we look at Buffalo, best record this team has had through 12 games in the last 23 years. Meanwhile, Baltimore has put together an 8-game win streak, the longest streak in the league this year, and their longest in franchise history.
I think it's probably a good place to start, right? When you just think about the Ravens organization and Harbaugh and Lamar and, you know, all he's had to prove and how the Ravens are built on toughness, you know, their entire makeup, their culture. Everything about it is just like perfect. They're meshing together. And it's tough to envision them no-showing during the playoff push, but my God, it's been like foot to the pedal for 6 weeks now. You just wonder how much they have left in the tank right now. But this is an interesting matchup. I think when you look at pricing, you know, you have an MVP candidate, highlights all over the internet every single day of the week. And you look at this little stretch run they've had where you knock off Russell Wilson, the Patriots, Deshaun Watson, the Rams and 49ers in 5 of your 6 games. I think the price on Baltimore is probably a touch high in the market right now. We saw that last week, 49ers get there. I was looking at our core number, and I don't know if I'm going to end up playing this, but core number on this game was 4.5. So Baltimore is being priced extremely high in this market. When you get to the matchup side of the ball, and I think you always start with Baltimore's offense because of some of those quirks that you can mention and how drastically they, you know, how drastically different they are from the rest of the league and how the league operates offensively. I think this is interesting, right? There are some favorable matchups, and then there's not when you look at this little matchup here. Obviously, the Bills have a tough time defending the run. We've talked about this, and God, we're talking about a lot of Buffalo football the last few weeks, but they're 22nd defensive
rush
efficiency.
Bring back Thurman Thomas, Marv Levy, and Jim Kelly. That's all we ask.
As a Dolphins fan growing up, I hated those guys. Good grief. And of course, Jim Kelly to boot was a Hurricanes guy, so that just made me hate him even more. But anyways, when you look at the Bills defense, 22nd defensive rush efficiency, that's come against the third easiest schedule of run offenses. Now you get, you know, it's like the creme de la creme here with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Not only are they the most efficient ground attack, but they run the most. So we're going to have to see what Sean McDermott comes up with here. I guess the fortunate part is he's had extra time to prepare, right? The Bills played on Thursday, has a few extra days. He does get to see Josh Allen when it's a mobile quarterback. The defense gets to see him every single day. And then you think about some of the weather that's potentially in play here, and it's a 17-mile-per-hour wind with gusts apparently above 35, so you potentially don't have to worry about the deep ball as much, so you might be able to cheat another guy down into the box. Where the favorable matchup comes, I think, for Buffalo's defense is if you can stick that extra guy in the box. If the deep ball isn't quite there, we know where Lamar does love to attack when he throws it, and it's to the tight ends, right? Over 47% of Lamar's completions are to tight ends, right? Whether it's Andrews or Boyle or even Hayden Hurst, all those guys have at least 23 receptions or more. Andrews actually has 50% more receptions than any other receiver on the Ravens roster. Buffalo right now, their defense, number one or number two in the amount of tight end targets they face, which means their scheme, their game plan is to eliminate the tight end. And because of that, tight end receptions allowed, tight end receiving yards allowed, tight end receiving touchdowns, all first or second defending that position. So if Lamar's not hitting the deep ball and you can cheat another guy down into the box to prevent some of the, I guess, run advantage Baltimore has, and you are good defending tight ends, suddenly I think Buffalo has a shot here.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Bills team. I mean, it's been fascinating to try and watch, and we talked about how they were overvalued earlier in the season, I think as recently as their game against Cleveland. But they continue to exceed some of those expectations. We know their strengths and weaknesses. And this is a Ravens side who I think we've talked about at great lengths. Payne, when do they have a collective sigh of relief? When does this team even come close to letting down? Or do they just feel, hey, look, we're going to be able to maintain this high level of play and try and do everything we can to keep the inside track for number one seed so the road to the AFC championship comes through Baltimore instead of going through New England or somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the point, right? It's not in their makeup. Right, Lamar's been a guy who's doubted. Like, Baltimore is this tough, gritty, physical team. Their offensive line, their defensive line, they're built to beat you up. They want to impose their will. It's not their mental makeup to lay down here. But to your point, they are human beings. And effectively, when we're dealing with our market, they are probably a little overpriced. But two things can be true here, right? Baltimore can go out and win this game. Doesn't mean they're not overpriced. They could win this game by 3 or 4 and you'd still cover your number with Buffalo. It's going to be interesting to see how high this number does get. A couple shops that flickered to 6.5 did not last very long as 7 got bought up. Some of the sharper shops are making sure they're under that secondary key number of 6, which has improved in importance since the extra point's been moved back. So I'm intrigued to see where this number goes. Again, our core number is around 4.5 roughly there. So at 6, if, you know, not saying go run to bet it, there's not enough value there. But if you're in a pool and you're forced to pick every game, my feeling is Buffalo is probably the way you want to go in a pool because everyone's going to be probably using Baltimore.
One last thing on this game. I want to ask about the other side of the ball as well.
Yeah,
we've seen Josh Allen make a few strides or more than a few strides offensively. 18 total touchdowns and just 3 giveaways over his last 8 games. We've seen the ground game for Buffalo pay off as well, picking up 122 or more yards the pedestrian way in 4 of the last 5. And you look at the Ravens defensively, I think that was the side of the ball that we had more questions on maybe coming into the season than even offensively. They've exceeded expectations, especially for me. Can Buffalo find an edge or an ability to attack Baltimore and put that defense on its heels a bit?
So you make a lot of good points there. One, the Bills' offense has clearly shown improvement, right? And that saying of ours is kind of coming to fruition. Go from horrific to just below average, and that's going to be probably the improvement you need with a defense that's that good. And what the Bills are doing, they've been very improved. Some of that a little bit schedule-aided, no doubt. But where they've really excelled is running the ball. Buffalo right now, 10th in rushing efficiency, 9th in rushing success rate, 6% better than league average in that regard. They're 9th in explosive runs. Like, Devin Singletary has been a difference maker for this offense in this ground game. And as good as the Ravens defense is in total, if you look, secondary, fantastic, right? They got Jimmy Smith back healthy. They traded for Peters to go along with Earl Thomas. But Baltimore can't stop the run. They're 25th in defensive rush efficiency, right? Since week 7, the Ravens have allowed 52% of runs to great successful, giving up 4.6 yards a rush. You look last week, right? The 49ers, in an absolute downpour, said, hey, we're going to run the ball on first down. Try to stop us. This is what we're going to do. And San Francisco goes for 6.3 yards per rush on first down last week. It's just they're having issues at the point of attack, which is very odd for a Baltimore defense, especially how they've been built the last few years. The other interesting thing here is, like, the Ravens defense, they're so damn blitz heavy. And I think that's probably an understatement. Wink Martindale right now sending pressure 52.5% of the time on defensive snaps. That's 9% more than the second most happy, you know, blitz happy team in the Buccaneers. They'll probably get to Josh Allen a few times, but if they don't, my feeling is Josh Allen could have a few big runs here and kind of annoy a defense on some critical downs. So I think you might see Wink maybe kind of rein in his aggressiveness here. That'll be something to watch. The other thing with the wind, and this might surprise some people, as great as an arm as Josh Allen has, right? He's got a cannon. He can throw it, you know, a country mile, not overly accurate. He's the second worst quarterback in deep passing. So if you do choose to send blitz, you're kind of playing into some of Josh Allen's strengths, right? Like, if he can get the ball out quick, that's where he's been pretty good. He's actually graded out the 5th best quarterback on short to intermediate throws in that, like, 1 to 19 yardage range. So if you blitz and he gets it out quick, I think that kind of plays into Josh Allen's strength a little bit as well.
Should be a fascinating game. I think both these teams have so much to play for. We know they have postseason aspirations, and both obviously with an inside track, a little bit of help. We might actually be talking about Buffalo knocking New England from its perch in the AFC East, but I'm not willing to go that far just yet. From that matchup, Payne, in the AFC, to one that'll go a long way in defining the NFC playoff picture. The 49ers on the road for their second straight tough matchup, this time down in New Orleans against the Saints. You're looking at New Orleans, a 2.5-point favorite at Foxbet. Total in this game sits at 44.5. And New Orleans has extra time to prepare. Played on Thanksgiving against Atlanta, had to withstand a barrage of onside kicks late in that contest. Meanwhile, San Francisco probably doing the prudent thing rather than traveling all the way back to the West Coast. They were down in Bradenton, Florida, practicing, and they did have some key additions to their practice routine over the last couple of days, getting some key cogs back in the fold. But when you look at this particular matchup, Payne, do you think that the Saints potentially have a little bit of a letdown knowing that they're the only team in the NFL that's already clinched a playoff berth? Or does the eye on the prize, essentially being the number one seed in the NFC, keep them razor focused? And if so, where are the matchups the 49ers would have to exploit if they're going to be successful here?
So, I mean, if the Saints lose this game, I don't think it's because they don't care about it, right? I think when you're just looking at this number, it would insinuate that San Francisco is the better team, right? Now, yes, they've clinched the division, but I think when you look at their home field advantage, the goal should be to get that throughout the course of the playoffs because it's a massive home field advantage and it's going to improve your chances greatly. So this is a big game. But obviously for San Francisco, huge matchup as well, especially with Seattle winning on Monday night. There's a lot of interesting things on both sides of the ball. Let's start with San Francisco's offense. And right off the bat, I would envision that we're just going to see probably a more dynamic game plan from Kyle Shanahan, right? You're in a dome, fast track, there's no weather. And so I think that plays a role. The other interesting element here is Kyle Shanahan, right? He's familiar with this environment, right? The staff he's going against, a lot of personnel, being just kind of like a few years removed from coaching in the NFC South with the Falcons. His offense ran roughshod against the Saints defense when he was there. Now, I know this is a much better iteration, but there are a lot of the same parts. One of the big things that stood out to me, though, is just the uptick in competition the Saints defense will face here, right? Through 13 weeks, the Saints defense has only faced three top 10 offenses in terms of overall efficiency. All of those matchups came in the first four games. Since week five, New Orleans has faced the second easiest schedule of passing offenses, third easiest schedule of rushing offenses. This could be a shock to the system a little bit. If Jimmy G, and this is probably the other key here, if Jimmy G has time to throw, 49ers are going to win this game outright. The Saints defensive line is, you know, a little different right now. They're different at home when the crowd gets involved, when teams on offenses can't really communicate, can't really hear themselves. Saints are top five in pressure rate. Jimmy G doesn't do very well under pressure. 66 passer rating, 5 picks, 3 touchdown passes. So that's the key, keeping them upright. The 49ers do a good job of that. Of the qualifying quarterbacks, 26 of them have been pressured more than Jimmy G. The 49ers are ninth in adjusted sack rate allowed. So I think it's important. If he has time to throw, that's very important, obviously. A couple guys potentially out in that front seven for the Saints defense, specifically at linebacker. And Joe Staley looks like he could be returning, so it'd be great to have your big left tackle back for a game like this. Where do we want to start on the other side of the ball, you think?
I think you look at the 49ers defense and their Achilles heel for as good as they've been stopping the pass, which is probably a good recipe to at least attempt to slow down Michael Thomas, which no team has been able to do. They have struggled
wide
slow
open
down
out there.
Yeah, they have struggled to slow down opposing ground attacks. I mean, you look at what they've done, Payne. They've allowed 100-plus yards to every opponent over the last 9 games, and all those opponents have averaged more than 4 yards per carry. If you're the Saints, do you go with a ground and pound attack? I mean, you uncovered a very interesting wrinkle as far as the Saints' offense, especially in the first half, since Drew Brees came back from that thumb injury.
I did.
So, well, should you choose to disclose it, that's one thing. I know you just uncovered an interesting wrinkle. Didn't mean to lead you down a path might not be able to share.
Very, very interesting. Not sure I have my iron with me right now. So stylistically, you know, I think this is probably a fun chess match to watch unfold, right? If you're kind of like looking on paper, you'd say just kind of how you broach the question, like, hey, you know, the 49ers could be a little vulnerable against the run, and Kamara could possibly get going here. All of that is could be likely, right? If you just look, 49ers, 14th in defensive rush efficiency. It's clearly kind of the weaker sector of their defense. They've allowed 50% of runs to great success. That's 24th in the NFL. And then you look at the Saints. Their O-line has been dominant, moving people around in the trenches, number one in adjusted line yards. And that's kind of equated to a top four rushing attack, both in efficiency and success rate. What's interesting, though, again, a little bit different in the schedule. San Fran has played the toughest schedule of run offenses by a long mile since week four. The Saints, since week six, below average schedule of run defenses. So that's interesting to me, right? The other thing is Alvin Kamara. Do you watch him? He looks different this year. Like there is
this injury has to be taking a bigger toll on his productivity and his ability to cut, plant, and pivot than the Saints ever wanted to let on.
I totally agree. When you dig into some of his like personal metrics in terms of yards above replacement, Kamara's regressed about 12% year over year as a runner, and that's with his O-line improving and adjusted line yards year over year. So it's really, really interesting to see. The other thing stylistically here is Drew Brees, right? He's the number one quarterback in the NFL right now against the blitz. He's got a 128 passer rating when opponents send five or more guys his way. So, you know, he's a wily old veteran, right? He's seen it all. He's tough to confuse, right? He's great diagnosing and identifying before the play, so he knows where the ball needs to go. He gets it out there quickly. With this matchup, though, and we've kind of talked about this 49ers defense, they have like this innate ability to get pressure without sending more than four defenders. San Francisco blitzes about 19% of the time. That's the fourth lowest rate in the NFL. And the 49ers are, I think, what was I looking at this morning? They're the only NFL team, Todd, that are bottom five in blitz rate, but top five in pressure rate. So again, we've talked about this, but that combination is pretty powerful, right? It just allows the 49ers secondary to not be compromised, right? It's why they have the most efficient pass defense in the NFL. So those two things here are interesting. If they're not going to blitz Brees where he's been so effective and they're going to make him, you know, pick apart this defense 10, 12, 14 play drives, becomes a much taller task. And to your point here, you mentioned where the 49ers are staying. They're staying at, or practicing rather, at IMG Academy down here. And so I've, you know, been able to pick up some information there because of proximity. The practice yesterday was described as the most peppy. That was the wordage used. Peppy.
They used peppy. The word they used to describe it.
Peppy. Yes. That was the most peppy practice we've seen so far this season. And Breida was a full go. I mentioned Joe Staley. The other interesting thing here that could add to the element of not having to blitz to get pressure, there's a D Ford sighting, right? Apparently, he looks pretty good. He's itching to play this week. Let's see if he's out there. But that could be a huge boost getting back two premium position players, a pass rusher and your left tackle. But two things to monitor there that could come to fruition and play a role in this game.
Should be one hell of a game. And as we said, I mean, you look at both these teams, they would love to have home field advantage throughout the course of the NFC playoffs, knowing how
there
grueling...
There goes the six on Baltimore, by the way. I got to get this phone checked out.
Knowing how grueling the road could be. Yeah, you might want to make sure this number's not bugged for us to potentially be talking about these things and not have numbers take off and go absolutely haywire before you have a chance to bet into them. Afternoon game, or at least I believe so. Yeah, it is an afternoon game at Foxborough where the Patriots will play host to Kansas City. New England will look to bounce back after that anemic offensive effort on Sunday Night Football against the Houston Texans. The Patriots, a field goal favorite, total in this game of 48.5 at Foxbet. And when you look at the Patriots paying, they have failed to cover the number in three of their last four. But this is a team that's been dominant at home off a loss. And as a favorite of four or less, I believe they're 19-6 straight up and have put together gaudy against the spread records over the last five seasons. We know they cover 71% of the time in their own building. But I don't think it's obviously as simple as that. Kansas City gave New England all they could handle and then some last year. A 43-40 Patriots win during the regular season and a 37-31 victory thanks to the perfect segue you gave us to D Ford not being able to line up on sides. When you look at this matchup, we know who has the edge at quarterback, and I think it would surprise some people that we're going to say, hey, Patrick Mahomes at this point in his career is the better quarterback than Tom Brady, despite Brady having those accolades. When you look here and try and figure out, Where is this game won? Is it Kansas City's offense against New England's defense, or is it the Patriots looking to get an offensive identity going against the Kansas City defense that's leaky against the run but well above average against the pass?
So it's, you know, there's some interesting things on both sides. And for me, it's like you hate caring about 60 minutes of football, but I think these are the kind of games where you should probably be paying closer attention. If you're using a model, you even want to think about possibly, you know, weighting these games a little bit more in terms of your value. No doubt the Patriots are one of the better defenses in the league. And, you know, when Bill Belichick didn't hire a defensive coordinator to, you know, replace Brian Flores, you felt like, hey, this probably isn't a bad thing. You know, how could more Belichick be bad? You want his hands on as much as possible, I would think. And you just look at the surface, it's worked, right? The Patriots are the most efficient defense in the NFL. People are calling them historically good. We'll see. Maybe the metrics bear that out in the end. But New England's played the easiest schedule of offense according to our metrics. And what would make me a little nervous if I were a Patriots fan is whenever they've stepped up in class and played a really good offense, haven't been all that great, right? Their two losses come against two top eight offenses in efficiency. So, you know, to their credit, they did play Dallas, right? They're third in offensive efficiency. That was their, or the third team that ranks top 10. But I don't want to take a lot from that, right? It's a dome team playing outdoors in a rainstorm with a 22-mile-per-hour wind and a coaching staff that isn't very good. Now you get Andy Reid, the Chiefs offense, top five in offensive efficiency. They've had success over the years, to your point. This is, to me, a really good test for both units because the question I think we kind of proposed on Monday or discussed a little bit, it's the same one we're going to have now because we knew we were going to discuss this game, so we teased it a little bit. Can the Chiefs' offense be balanced, right? Can they be multidimensional? It can't all be on Patty Mahomes' shoulders. And right now, you look, the Chiefs are 19th in rushing efficiency. Think about this time of year, Todd, right? It's December, and you look at their schedule, and they have two home games. So most likely at Arrowhead, it's going to be cold. It's probably going to be windy. Your two road games, obviously, one this week against New England, and then you're at Chicago. So you can't be this dainty offense that just relies on Patrick Mahomes, and as great as he is, and as strong as his arm is and as freakish as his talent is, he's still not 100%. So, you know, when you look at this matchup, I think you need to have some semblance of a ground game here. If you look why Casey's been so successful these last couple years is because they make New England worry about running backs. You know, that first matchup last season, Kareem Hunt goes for 185 total yards. You have to think about the running back if you're a defense. The playoff matchup, Damian Williams has 100 total yards and three touchdowns. You have to think about the running back. Right now, I don't know if you're doing that. So we talk about this all the time. Belichick usually makes you play left-handed. So if KC can't, you know, become balanced, I think this is tougher than people think. And when you just look at the market a little bit here, there was opportunity for New England minus 2.5. We're now out to about 3.2. If there were ever a time, and let's just kind of put it this way, if there were ever a time, this is probably the lowest New England stock would ever be if they are the team that we perceive them to be. Now, if they're not, they're going to fall off a cliff. But if we still think they are a legitimate contender, then 2.5 was probably a little low.
Well, you mentioned that, and I think the Chiefs running back situation gets even murkier when they go out and they sign Spencer Ware to bolster some of their depth as Darrell Williams goes on season-ending IR. You look at their inability to find a consistent semblance of a ground game. But I think that also begs the question, when you look at the Patriots defensively, Payne, and we know Stephon Gilmore most likely match up with Travis Kelce in this matchup, New England has struggled because they have to focus on the run, as you mentioned, with a little bit of Kansas City speed over the top. Is that ever a concern for you with the Patriots secondary, or is Bill Belichick just play far enough off the likes of a Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, not allowing those guys to beat him over the top like we've seen so many times in the past?
Well, it's a great question because now you have Mecole Hardman, right? Wasn't there in past matchups. So if you do choose to go Gilmore on Kelce and remove that target over the middle that's right in front of Patty's face, how are you defending two speed guys out wide? Typically what you would do, or typically what Bill's done, is you defend Kelce with Gilmore and you double Tyreek. So I think with Hardman there, it becomes a little bit more difficult to do. Now, there is a variance aspect of New England's defense versus the Chiefs' offense, right? New England gets a ton of pressure. Sixth highest rate. Mahomes, third best quarterback in the NFL when he's pressured. Something has to give there, and I think that could be the element on that side of the ball that does create some variance. But to your point, it will be interesting to see, because I'm not sure with Mecole Hardman there that you can potentially play the same approach that you have in years past, because now you have two lightning fast guys on the outside.
Are you worried or going to be worried if every time Patrick Mahomes takes off from the pocket and decides to extend plays with his legs, either looking to create something downfield or actually trying to run for first downs?
Did I tell you this?
Did you tell me what?
I can't watch Chiefs games. It gives me anxiety watching him play around with the knee. And I tried last week, and all of a sudden I see him like scrambling around for the touchdown. I'm like, all right, I'm done. Flip the channel. I'm going to go watch this blowout over here on the Arizona game. The other side of the ball, where do we want to start there?
I think the real question that everyone wants to ask is, New England has struggled to run the ball effectively all season. We know Kansas City has to be attacked between the tackles. And for the first time, I think all season long, we saw New England employ a little bit of a different wrinkle against the Houston Texans. Now, I know a lot of that was in comeback mode, but you saw James White, who has typically been a receiver out of the backfield, become a true running back. How does New England go about structuring a game plan, Payne, that forces Kansas City to respect the run and New England doesn't have to try and chuck it around 40 or 50 times, playing into the strength of that Kansas City defense?
I was happy to see James White get involved in the pass game a little bit as well. Kind of banged the table for that one. I don't know what was going on there. Same thing here. It's like, which offense can also just be balanced? And this isn't anything new, right? If people have listened to this podcast for a few years, Todd, right? Chiefs struggle to stop the run. It's really been no different. 30th in defensive rush efficiency. They've allowed 55% of runs to great successful. 8% worse than league average there. You look at their explosive run defense, 28th in that regard. So they're giving up big hitters on the ground too. I would think if you're using White, well, he's probably not the best runner. He does probably have the most speed of the back, so maybe it's a big one or two there. I think we've been waiting to see New England, or at least we expected to see New England come into the season and continue to be run heavy, right? Because that's what they were down the stretch last season when they went on, you know, the Super Bowl run. New England hasn't shown that ability to run the ball because their fullback's been out, James Devlin. And we talked about this injury, I think when it happened in week 2 or 3. Since that injury, New England's 25th in the NFL in rushing success rate. Only 43% of runs have graded positive. And they've played a schedule of run defenses that's one of the 10 easiest in football. So you look formationally right now, and the Patriots aren't doing anything close to what they did when James Devlin was there, right? They've almost like given up on running the ball. It's really wild. Sony Michel, he's defined sophomore slump. And if you're doing a bunch of reading this week, everyone's calling on him to have this big game and to show up, because that's how you need to attack the Chiefs defense. The way Brady and the pass game are operating right now, and to your point, Todd, a lot of that was in junk time last week in comeback mode, not so much in the first half. But I think why it's really important is it's going to be difficult, I think, to find success through the air here. Right? Since like about week 4, and I know that's when we started mentioning it, everyone's shitting on the Chiefs defense, but I said, man, this is really interesting. This secondary's sneaky good. And so again, I looked this morning, and the Chiefs are 6th in passing efficiency defense, well above average defending explosive passes as well. And the big kicker for me is Chiefs defense faced the very toughest schedule of passing offenses. So when you have that combination, New England's got to figure out how to run the ball. When they do choose to pass it, though, right? Get back to your old ways, like we saw last week. Find James White. Find your tight end a little bit. The Chiefs are abysmal defending backs and tight ends through the air. Kansas City right now, they've allowed the 6th most receptions to running backs and a league high 82 receptions to tight ends. So get the ground game going. When you do drop back to pass, find James White. Find your tight end. And I think that those are the matchup advantages that New England will have on this side of the ball.
Watching the Patriots last week, I mean, is there any hope that this passing game is going to finally break out of its shell? We know what Julian Edelman can accomplish, but can Tom Brady start to develop a rapport or chemistry with a Jacoby Myers, with a N'Keal Harry, or get Philip Dorsett out there? Or do we think for the Patriots to be successful this season like they were last year, hey, they're going to have to find a way to run the football. They're going to have to lean on their defense because that's where their strengths need to be if they're going to be able to defend their Super Bowl championship.
Well, they're going to have to defend on rely on their defense for sure. They're going to have to figure out how to be somewhat competent running the ball. But again, I think it's a scheme thing. I think it's a personnel thing. Not having James Devlin there is massive, and they know it, and that's why they've changed formationally. But to your point, how does Tom Brady and this passing offense get going? It's probably not going to be something people want to hear, but there's a guy down here in Miami that is working out, and I can tell you Tom Brady would love to have him back. So that is going to be interesting to see develop over the next couple of weeks, potentially.
Oh, if he ends up on that roster, it definitely changes the power dynamic in the AFC for sure with New England and what they would add as far as a vertical element in their passing game. To the Sunday night game, Payne, and it's a showdown of familiar foes in the NFC West where the Rams and Seahawks will take to center stage. This game right now, a pick 'em at Foxbet. You're looking at a total here sitting at 47 and a half. The Seahawks now have ascended to the number 2 seed in the NFC. They can clinch a playoff berth with a win. 5 straight victories. Their last defeat actually came at the hands of the hottest team in the NFL, the Baltimore Ravens. The Rams, though, of course, they lost the first meeting 30-29 as a Greg Zuerlein 44-yard field goal went awry. But you look at the way that that game played out. The Rams outgained Seattle by 48 yards, 477 to 429 on the exact same number of offensive plays. The Rams have actually gained 450 yards or more in the last 3 meetings and scored 29 points in the last 4 meetings against the Seahawks. Will this matchup be different, knowing that the Rams' playoff hopes, however slim they may be, hang in the balance and are contingent on beating Seattle on Sunday night?
You did some digging there. I like that. You're right. This series has been an over series. And we've seen some, let's phrase it this way, open 46.5, got sent to 48. There's going to be some playing around with this key number 47, it appears. But once it got to 48, it got sent back down. I'm not sure where this will close. And that becomes interesting to gauge. But again, to your point, this is an over series. And I think when you look at the Rams, how they operate, the key is pressure. Can they manage it? Right? Honestly, when you're looking at a Rams game and when to potentially buy or sell, I think opposing team pressure rate is one of the first elements you're going to look at. And, you know, with Seattle's defense, 4th worst in pressure rate. And I think this is something McVay has picked up on just based on the passing rate of Goff in the last few matchups. And you even go back to week 5. McVay went uber pass heavy again because Gurley couldn't really get it going on the ground. Goff chucked it 49 times. So it tells me McVay and Goff aren't really fearful of the Seattle pass rush. And we'll see if that's the same thing this week. Now all 3 receivers are healthy again. There's probably some value in general with the perception of this offense because as a whole, you look at the Rams just 20th in offensive efficiency. Everyone's like, oh, McVay lost his genius card, right? But they've been banged up. They've faced the 6 toughest schedule of defenses. Now you're healthy, right? And this is probably going to be a step down in class. So my feeling here is, Todd, that we're going to continue to see the Rams take a little bit of money here. They're going to end up closing the favorite.
Wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, you look at the situation and the way it'll play out for the Rams. Clearly, an extra day of preparation will only help that point. We know about Russell Wilson's dominance in primetime, and I think that's going to be a popular narrative on a number of fronts. You mentioned the Rams offense, Seattle's inability to get a pass rush. We talked about Ezekiel Ansah towards the top of the show. The Seahawks have at least had 2 sacks, though, in 4 of the last 5 games, so they have shown modest improvements. But on the other side of the ball, Payne, when I look at this Seahawks offense against the Rams defense, the Rams defense might not be getting enough credit for what they've done to keep this team competitive. They're still one of the best teams in the league right now covering the spread because I think all the headlines have been about what's wrong with the Rams offense. The Rams defense has actually been where they've been able to find some stability and keep them in a lot of these football games.
It's wild we don't talk about this stuff in preparation before these shows. We kind of, you do your notes, I do mine. And this led in the same direction. And it's become an even better defense since Jalen Ramsey arrived in week 7. Since that time, the Rams are 6th in passing success rate defense, fourth in rushing success rate defense, in the big one, second in explosive pass defense. Anybody see what's going on with that Jacksonville pass defense since Ramsey's departure?
Well, like that's a little bit different.
Clean up on aisle eight. There's a mess over here.
Yeah, that's a little bit different. That may not just be the pass defense. That might be the offense. That might be the sidelines. That may be a complete overhaul in Jacksonville. But Payne, to your point, it is good to see one Florida State defensive back playing well in Jalen Ramsey, because Xavier Rhodes, he might be cooked.
Oh, have you you seen that movie Stuck on You?
Who's in Stuck on You?
It's Matt Damon.
No, I have not.
Where the two guys are connected.
No, I have not seen that movie Stuck on You.
You just ruined my analogy.
But you can they eventually get separated.
They eventually get separated, and they get very like sad about it. And this is kind of like AJ Bouye's mindset right now, since he's been separated from Jalen Ramsey. Like he's out there just winging it around. No clue what's going on with him. Anyways, let's focus back in here, since you don't know my analogy, since you don't watch movies.
I watch good movies. I don't watch that. And I do highly recommend Matt Damon's latest cinematic creation.
See that lead in I did for you there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I like what you did there.
Kiss up.
We'll see if the few listeners out there that understand that inside joke can appreciate it.
Okay. Matchup wise here, pressure probably is key on this side of the ball as well. And as great as Russell Wilson is under pressure, right, and he does have the best passer rating in the NFL when the heat is on, and that's because of his mobility and his cool nature and demeanor. But like, quarterbacks don't like being pressured. And the Rams D-line, I think, has an advantage here. And you look at Donald and company, third best quarterback pressure rate in the NFL. They only blitz about 26% of the time, so they're not left exposed in the back. And the Seahawks have trouble in pass protection. The one thing that we did see in the first matchup was there was an explosiveness element to the Seattle offense, right? They gave up the 40-yard touchdown. They gave up, I believe Russ averaged nearly 11 yards per pass attempt. They hit over five explosive plays through the air. So I think with Jalen Ramsey back, or Jalen Ramsey here now in this matchup, and as I alluded to, second in explosive pass defense, I think that eliminates that just a little bit. You also have the element of Schottenheimer. Like, how is he going to come out in this game plan? It seems like every single week they're so dead set on getting the ground game going. And now you have this two-back system with Penny and Carson. They always attempt to try to run the ball early and often, and then they eventually figure out, like, hey, it's probably better to rely on Russell Wilson. But you do get that initial punch in the ground game. It seemed to work a little bit the first go-around, right? You're only going to look at 3.9 yards a rush, but they fell just short of 200 yards rushing. They eventually wore down that Rams defense. They did have a 53% rushing success rate in that Week 5 matchup. So we're inevitably going to see some run here. How do the Rams handle it? They've been pretty good in that area, much improved year over year, but you just hope they don't wear down towards the end of the game like they did a little bit in that first go-around.
Forgive my ignorance, and I apologize for not knowing all the playoff scenarios that'll play out here. When you look at the NFC West, if the Seahawks were to hypothetically lose this game...
I'm the guy you're about to ask this question to.
Well, I just want to kind of lay it out there and use you as a sounding board. I mean, I know the Seahawks right now are in first place in the division with the same record as the 49ers, both teams sitting at 10-2. The Seahawks theoretically could lose this game if they were to win at Carolina next week, win at home against Arizona, and essentially the division would come down to that Week 17 matchup against the 49ers, and it might anyways, so they could get the season sweep. So you never hate to diminish the importance of a football game, but if there was one, even within the division, where the Seahawks wouldn't have to be in a must-win mentality, I think that motivation is significantly different for these two teams, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Sure. I was just kind of listening there. I'm not good with the whole playoff matchup. Like, these are professionals. Like, you know, I don't want to say that guys are going 100% all the time after referencing AJ Bouye a couple minutes ago. But to the point here, it's like, if you're not going close to 100%, there is a real possibility you're going to get injured playing this.
Well, hold on one second, though. And this goes back to a point we discussed earlier, and I'm not going to say lack of
focus.
Well,
I don't know the whole playoff scenario. You were talking, but, and laying it out. I have no clue of the playoff scenario. I'm just telling you the Rams probably are going to show up here, and it's apparently the sharp side. Now, Are they going to win the game? I don't freaking know.
Well, that remains to be seen. If we knew that ahead of time, we wouldn't do these goddamn podcasts.
Yes, and I think there is an element from the folks that I've talked to, and I don't know if it's achievable now as potentially the Rams move to the favorite, but I think with that Seattle slow starting vibe where they like to run it a lot, catching the Rams in the first half plus a hook might have been the better approach than, you know, taking the Rams plus one full game. There is some discussion in that realm. But yeah, I don't. What are you attempting to say here? That Seattle not care about this game?
No. I'm not saying they're not going to care. It's a division chance. You have the opportunity to knock out a team that represents.
Right. If San Francisco goes out and wins, right? I mean, then there's a lot on the line. You got to win the division.
Then you're a game back. I mean, it's just one of those things sometimes when you try and figure out some of those intangible edges being built in a line, but this may be more that level of familiarity and the fact that Goff and the Rams offense have had a lot of success in the past year and the confidence would be brimming. And when you look at the Rams, as we said, this is a team that, despite everybody wanting to pile on some of the struggles they've had, they still are tied with the third best ATS record in the NFL this year. They've played six of their last seven games under the total, and I know the last four in this series have gone over the total. I give you all of that to say, hey, they're going to play the game. You figure out your betting angle, and I think some of the compelling case you made here for the Rams being what would have been a live home underdog here could be zapped out of the market as that number has come down.
And to what you're suggesting, listen, there are different elements. There are different advantages that every team has in a game, right? Like you can pinpoint a couple for each of these teams. Which team can go out, execute, and attack that weakness best is inevitably going to win this game. And there are matchups for both teams. And even with this total, as I'm kind of alluded to, Todd, there are a couple battles. There are a couple mindset changes, right? Stylistically, schematically, matchup-wise, you could see why the over would make sense here. Then you outline some of these things with the Rams' defensive improvements and something I kind of alluded to last week, and it's a trend that a lot of professional bettors do look at. This is the second meeting within the season of a familiar opponent, and those games historically have trended under at about a 56% clip. Now, last week, I believe there were six matchups, and they went like 3-3 with that iteration of the second matchup of the division game going under. But there's just so many different things that you can look at in these games, and inevitably, you know, it's about attacking the weakness. Whoever can do that best is going to come away with a win, especially in a game here that's a virtual pick 'em.
Makes a ton of sense. There's no doubt about it. And a game on Sunday Night Football that'll have plenty of drama. Maybe not as much drama, though, on Thursday Night Football tonight, Payne, where the Cowboys will take on the Bears. It's Dallas, a 3-point favorite on the road at Soldier Field. Total in this game, 43.5 at Fox Bet. And I guess I have one simple question on this game, and it's not an oversimplified handicap by any stretch of the imagination. We've talked about it at great lengths. The Bears' run defense has not been the same without Akeem Hicks. The Cowboys' offense seems to be highly correlated to the success of Ezekiel Elliott running the football between the tackles and Jason Garrett's need, desire, call it what you will, to get infatuated with this pass-happy attack. Will the Cowboys be smart enough to give Ezekiel Elliott the ball 20-plus times today, run the ball against the interior of the Bears' defense, and force Mitchell Trubisky on the other side to attack a Cowboys secondary where I don't think the Bears should have a ton of success?
You would freaking hope, right? And just from looking at this matchup, one thing to really factor here is it looks like Akeem Hicks is out again. He's a week away. Apparently, he wants to return for the Packers game. So the big man on the defensive side of the ball, on the defensive line for Chicago, is out another week. And I think that's obviously important to factor when you have Dallas, when you have Zeke coming to town. And sure, you know, Hicks has been out for a while now. But the difference is so glaring. And when you look at this specific matchup, and you try to project it, it's really, we have to mention it, you know? So I dug into this a little bit. When Akeem Hicks has been on the field for the Chicago Bears defense, the opposing team, they've only been successful in 35% of their runs. On snaps where he's been off the field, that number has ballooned out to a 48% success rate for the opposing team when they decide to run. And what really slants some of those metrics even more and kind of proves his worth, which is interesting because the league is trending towards devaluing the interior linemen. It's all about the pass rusher as teams start to throw the ball more. But if you look in the games where Hicks has played, every single offense that they've faced is above average in rushing efficiency, yet 13% better against the run with him in the game. In the games he's missed, the offenses combined to form the sixth easiest schedule of run offenses. So it is, it's glaring. And then obviously, you know, you don't have to tell anybody. It's a great offensive line for Dallas. It's Zeke, third most efficient ground game. When you try to project the other matchups and you look at things through the air, it's good on good, right? The Bears are a top 10 passing defense. They faced the eighth toughest schedule of pass offenses. The defensive line hasn't done nearly as good as a job getting to the quarterback, but they're still eighth in pressure rate. So it's just, again, it's a lot of good on good here. Especially with the Cowboys offensive line, number one in adjusted sack rate allowed, fourth most efficient pass game. So that element here is all about the ground attack. Get Zeke going, feed him. Again, like it's, you paid the guy $90 million, let him be the horse during your playoff push here. And I think that is the only matchup that truly matters on this side of the ball. Now, Chicago, you know, doesn't do a great job defending tight ends, but does Dallas really have one? And I think they do in Jarwin. I don't play him enough. So I don't know if like Witten's a guy that's going to like expose a defense at his age and, you know, with his athletic and skill and speed factor. But if you do go to Jarwin enough here, he might have some advantages against the Chicago linebacking corps. But it's all about being able to stop the run. If they can eliminate Zeke from this game, they have a shot. If not, and Dallas chooses to run the ball, they're probably going to, I don't want to say dominate, but they're probably going to show pretty well here.
On the other side, the Bears, of course, Mitchell Trubisky, two decent games by his standards, 300-plus passing yards, or should I say 600 combined passing yards over the last two games. But I did find one quote from a Chicago Bears beat writer, Mark Potash, pretty interesting. Called Trubisky's performance against the Lions an open book quiz, and now he has to take out the blue book and take an all-essay exam against the Cowboys on Thursday night at Soldier Field. We know Trubisky has wilted under pressure, Dallas among some of the best in terms of sack rate and getting pressure. Where do the Bears have to go to find a semblance of offensive success in this matchup?
It sounds like he's the one beat writer that's showing signs of skepticism. And
well, I mean, everybody wants to try and make sure that Mitchell's around. I mean, the Bears, what you have to realize, having grown up in Chicago, Bears fans maybe blow hotter and colder faster than any fan base out there. They want to try and run you out of town, and with one good performance, they welcome you back in with open arms into their good graces, let alone when a team goes out there and wins three out of the last four games like the Bears have done, beating high-profile starting quarterbacks like Jeff Driscoll, Daniel Jones, and David Blau.
Well, let me be the one to piss down your leg, Chicago Bears fan, once again. It sounds like there's just, from most folks, there's this false sense of hope about the Bears offense because of what they've accomplished in the last month. And if you look at trending performances, which we like to do, Chicago looks fantastic. Top 10 in passing success rate. Wow. Maserati Mitch is back. I don't see that, right? Also, it looks like the ground game is vastly improved. It's not good, but at least there is some complement factor to it, right? You go from one of the worst to like 19th in the ground game over this trending 4 weeks. The Cowboys defense is no great unit, that's for sure, right? One of the most disappointing in the entire NFL season. But look who Chicago has faced the last month. They've played one defense with a pulse in the Rams, and the Bears put up a whopping 3.6 yards per play. And if you look why Chicago's offense is improving and why there is this false sense of hope, in my mind, they've played the Detroit defense twice. They're 28th in defensive efficiency. They have played the Giants defense, 27th in defensive efficiency. Haven't played anybody. And the one team they did, they looked abysmal. Again, like the Cowboys defense isn't good, but they do have matchup advantages, to your point, Todd, in the trenches. Chicago doesn't really have anybody that moves you in the ground game. They're 27th in line yards, right? And the Dallas defense does a good job pressuring quarterbacks, top 10 in pressure rate. So I think their D-line is important in this one. They have the ability to take over here. Plus, this isn't your typical Thursday night game. It's full rest, right? So the travel isn't as daunting for your traditional road team on the short week. You know, there's been a position taken on the Cowboys here. I think last night around dinner time, my time, -2.5 got zapped. We're now out to like 3.2. That move's pretty real. So that's what I've seen so far in this game.
Yeah, 4 games in 19 days for both these teams, too. You wonder how the attrition starts to take its toll. Obviously, a lot at stake as Dallas still has the inside track to winning the NFC East, given Philadelphia's struggles. The Bears, well, they're going to need some help as they sit 2 games behind the Minnesota Vikings in their quest for the wild card. And the Bears' schedule, arguably the most difficult over the final month of the season. When you consider they still have to take on Minnesota, Green Bay, and Kansas City. Of course, not in that particular order. 5 big games, all broken down as eloquently and as in-depth as we possibly can. But as all of you, our loyal listeners, know, we still have one order of business, and we'll get to that in a matter of minutes. First things first, though, you should be following the podcast on Twitter, at BetTheBoardPod. Follow Payne on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider, and I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. The best bet comes to you courtesy of FoxBet, where the biggest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting and one of the fastest growing betting apps out there. Whatever sport you like betting on, FoxBet has you covered. You can download the app to your smartphone from absolutely anywhere and place real money wagers on dozens of sporting events with the easy-to-use app if you live in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. FoxBet, make the call, download the app today, and be sure to check out the bevy of offers and boosts currently available on that website. Payne, the NFL, it's remained our elusive white whale. You talked about how we got hot towards the tail end of last season. It's time to start a heater beginning with week 14. Where are we going with our best bet?
It's a game we've talked about at the top of the show. I believe it was the second game we discussed. San Francisco, New Orleans. Our metrics indicate that San Francisco is the better football team here. The market indicates San Francisco is the better football team here. I like how they've handled the travel, staying back on the East Coast. I like a lot of the matchups that this game potentially provides. The number has gotten away from us a little bit, but there was, you know, a little money sent into the market last night on New Orleans, and it makes getting 3 far more achievable. Because if you're looking across the market right now, New Orleans is like 2-20, 2-17 on average. I got to the 3 last night for 19 cents. And I think you do that every single day of the week and twice on Sunday with a total at 44. So that's what I did. That's what I would suggest. San Francisco on the bye, 3-20 with a total 44. And I think there's good value in that. I don't think we need to discuss much more. We probably broke that game down for about 12 minutes already. So if you're one of those guys that are just fast forwarding to the best bet, because we provide the timestamp now, go back to the top of the show.
I like that. Concise, precise, nice and succinct. A game that we've already had on at the top. And the 49ers on the road for the second straight week, plus the 3, minus $1.20. Widely available. Shop around for the best of the number. All right, Payne, another NFL podcast officially in the books. A lot of big games still remaining as all of these teams have 4 games left on their schedule before we're talking about the 12 teams vying for the Lombardi Trophy in a game that'll be taking place right in your backyard in early February. Any parting shots, words of wisdom, final tidbits that you'd like to impart on our audience before we close up shop this fine Thursday?
No, let's get a winner. Let's end the season hot. Let's get back into the black and do this thing. That's it. It's about the 49ers on Sunday.
You got it, my friend. Jimmy Garoppolo, big day against that New Orleans defense dealing with a bevy of injuries in its linebacking core. For Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Thank you to all of you, our loyal listeners. You guys are the ones that make it worthwhile doing these podcasts all throughout the course of the season. Make sure you're following Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. But most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And come Sunday afternoon with a 49ers ticket in hand, we'll see you at the window.